Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 195. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
That's some rockin' music.
Graham Thickens.
Is that Christmas music?
I think it is.
I think so.
It is. And Phil Wilson.
Oh, I got that holiday spirit, baby. That rocks. I love that.
Yeah. Good morning, everybody.
Rockin' Christmas.
So I got to hear about Mini Demo, because I didn't make it, as you guys know. It took me an hour and 10 minutes to get the uptime.
Why didn't you make it? Tell everybody why you didn't make it.
It was the snow. No, it was actually the stupid drivers on the road. If it was me, it'd be fine. If I was the only one on the road.
I got to call my car. That's it. I'm giving up.
It was, oh God, it was so bad.
I've had enough.
So, but based on the tweets that I saw and the photos, Graham, you sent out a photo or two, and it looked like it was just packed.
Yeah, it was. It took a while to get started because everybody was so behind on their commute to get there. But oh God, there. What do you think, Phil? There had to be 500-600 people crammed into that place by eight o'clock.
Yeah, it may. I mean, and the space, you know, the pre-event space, you know, where the bar was, you know, so small it was packed in there. So I shot right for the major auditorium just so I could get out of that crowd. But
it was good.
I think it was one of the better, as far as smoothest demos, that really went very smoothly, I thought.
Somebody said the audio was pretty bad.
Well, it's the acoustics in the place.
Okay.
You know, I think it's just got that big open ceiling and that audio just kind of gets lost up in there.
Yeah.
I was having real trouble hearing them in the back. But
were you?
Oh, yeah. But then, you know, I'm not sure they were holding the mic close enough to their mouth. And, you know, but you had to be up near the front to really catch what was going on, I think.
Yeah, I thought some very interesting startups. Obviously, we had, you know, Spark and SmartThings rolled out their demos, and they kind of worked together since Spark had set up an agreement with, you know, to work with the SmartThings as well. And I thought that was really well done. Obviously, you know, other news that Spark didn't hit their Kickstarter goal.
Yeah, that's too bad.
We'll talk about that in a minute. But and then Triple Map. I really enjoyed that. As somewhat of a data geek, that was a very cool thing. So what did you think?
Couldn't hear it, and I was out of the room. Tell us.
Ah, there you go. It's basically the ability to map data analytics. It was just very interesting to see. And my IGDs was kind of an interesting thing for helping figure out, you know, a kid's reading level. Let's see. Coset. I'm trying to remember. Oh, that was the fun demo. That was for sure. The guy for that startup, Irish guy who really likes the microphone. So spent a lot of time having fun with the crowd. It was basically instant interaction, you know, polling and that sort of a thing. And then Oppositrus is game, some game development stuff. And Oppositrus is the opposite of Tetris. So it was
good. Everything goes up?
Yep.
So it's anti-gravity gaming?
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. And then the Shaweet app.
Loyalty app. I talked to that guy.
Mm-hmm. Yep, loyalty app. So, but all in all, a great time. Yeah, it was a real challenge to get to it this year. You know, I'm not sure necessarily about the logic behind doing an event in downtown Minneapolis at the same time as the Holodazzle is going on. But, you know,
wasn't there a Timberwolves game too that night?
Could be. Yeah.
I think it's all about the need to have it in a big place.
Well, I think that's a great space. I really like that place. I don't know, Graham, if you like that spot, but I really like that spot a lot.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, I don't mind it. I mean, and the staff and the catering was great, and, you know, no complaints there. It's the acoustics, though, in any large room like that is always going to be a challenge, I suppose, if you're not up near where they are, where the speakers are. Yeah, I didn't see a lot of speakers mounted around the room, but
I believe there were four.
Yeah, it's a big dang room. That's for sure.
Well, you know, having known a guy who is an audio engineer and had set up rooms like that over time, one of the things that they do is they go in and they go in ahead of time and they set up all these speakers that balance one another. So
yeah, you know,
the sound waves actually sort of collide and you end up having pretty good acoustics throughout the entire cavernous space like that.
Imagine so. Steve's concerned about sound. I can't imagine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Usually he doesn't care about sound that much.
No, not at all. I've been thinking about you just using a headset with a little dime-sized microphone from now on.
A cup and a string.
The podcast.
Yeah, why not? There you go. So yeah, great mini demo.
Yeah.
Continues to grow, and we'll look for great stuff in the future.
And then how about the Mima party? How was that? That was Wednesday night, right?
Yeah, that was good. That was also downtown at the Kohl's Center. The dance place on 5th and Hennepin. Really nice place. I hadn't been in there. And it was just set up in the lobby area. And there were probably couple hundred people there, I'd say. You know, the usual cast of characters who we all know. Yeah. So ran into a lot of good people. There was no formal program, but they had a slideshow running. And one of the things up on the wall, which was kind of fun to see photos from Mima Summit and previous events. And they had that same DJ from the after party at the... he's like a 60-year-old DJ, but he was playing some pretty cool, you know, classic stuff, classic rock and stuff. And one thing I think they kind of announced that night, or maybe they announced it prior to this, is one of the keynoters for next year's MEMA Summit has already been snagged. Nate Silver.
Yep. Oh.
Yeah.
That'll be cool.
Yeah, so that was up on the slideshow, and I only hung around for a couple hours, though, until my meter ran out. Then I ran out to avoid a ticket. I spend half my life avoiding tickets. So.
Graham, you need a drone.
Yeah, I do.
Just hang on the bottom of it and have it fly you right in there and drop you.
You know, I am going to propose that we put on an event here soon. It's going to be a couple of years, but I think that we should put on the first ever Minivate drone shoot. What do you think?
I think that's good.
We go out hunting drones.
We should. Yeah, there you go.
I want the burrito delivery drone. That's the one I want that I tweeted this week. I'll put that in the show notes. Getting your Chipotle delivered, you know, by drone would be so much fun.
Well, actually, I want to do DIY UFOs. And so what you do is you take a hanger and then you melt a plastic bag so the bag forms on top, and then you put a little oil-soaked rag and light it on fire, and the thing lifts up into the air, and, I mean, it'll fly for miles. Of course, it'll probably land on a house and start it on fire. But
so that's like the medieval drone. Is that what that is?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is. So too bad about our pals at Spark. What a drag.
No, that was entirely unexpected, though. And they could see, you know, just like QFO Labs, long before the deadline, I think they had the idea that, you know what, this is a lot of money to raise in that short amount of time.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep. They got halfway.
What did they come in at, the final?
$125,588 with 1,601 backers.
Yeah. That's not bad. That's double what QFO had. QFO had just under 1,000, and they were trying to raise almost as much as Spark. So,
and Spark is now taking pre-orders on their website. So, if you're interested, you can do that. $49 per socket.
Right, but nine month
delivery turn. Yeah,
yeah,
ooh, that far.
Huh? Yeah, they were estimating July in on the Spark Kickstarter thing. So, you know, it looks like it's pushed out a little bit.
Yeah, well, you slow down when you don't have the money.
Well, and are they going to get your credit card with the pre-order right away because you're getting such a good discount?
Don't know.
Do they get the money right away? Apparently, there
are. I think they do.
Yeah, I think they do. Yeah, it's pre-order.
That are doing that. And I think QFO is trying to do that as well. And they just got back from China. So I'm interested to hear what's going on over there on the manufacturing front.
Well, it's interesting, Zach, during his mini demo, and I knew this before that, but he talked about they'll be participating in an incubator in China. So they're on their way to do that.
No, I heard that last night. I picked that up last night. Yeah, what's the story on that?
Well, they were accepted by an incubator to you know develop their project there. So I believe they leave for that in January.
Is it 3 month kind of a deal?
Yeah, it's a 3 or 6 month deal. Yeah,
that's cool. I wonder what city.
Somewhere in China.
Yeah,
it'll be a Chinese city.
Well, that narrows it down.
That does narrow it down. Yeah, it's not a very big place. Not very many people.
Not at all. So
yeah.
Steve skipped over this, but last night there was one other party last night, the big Minnesota Tech holiday bash.
Oh, duh.
You guys skipped over that, and I missed it. I had to miss it because of my son was in a swim meet, which went very well, by the way. But tell me about the holiday bash.
You're right. I totally blew that out of my head. Well, Graham, what did you think? I really enjoyed it.
I thought it was great. I thought that W3I deserves a big, you know, for supporting the tech community. I don't know that they had any other sponsors backing this thing with them. Next year, Rob told me they hope to get, you know, like a core group of sponsors to do it up even bigger. But you know, they spent a lot of money entertaining the crowd and great food and free beer and lots of gambling tables, right?
So, yeah.
Was the casino night? Was it fun?
It was fun. Yeah, it was. I was up at one point about 450 and then I lost it all. But what you did is you bought money, which you traded in for chips at the table, and then you would play, and then whatever you won or had left over, you'd put into the jar of the association of your choice.
Nice.
And so during the evening, they would have the associations get up and talk about their mission and what they were doing and so on. And so it was a great fundraiser, and I had really a lot of excellent conversation. I was really pleased.
Oh yeah, it was. There was a lot of great stuff going on. Learning about who's doing what, and you know, I met a bunch of new people and got updated on a lot of new startups and things happening. And I was telling Steve last night, I got to the point where my brain was about to explode. I was catching up on so much stuff. So there was, you know, it was the networking that was the main benefit last night for everybody, I think. And I was worried there for a while that the gambling tables weren't being used.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
As the beer was consumed, it definitely picked up as the evening went on. And they finally, I think, broke down the tables about 10.
The event was over at 10.
Yeah, maybe, officially over at that point.
But people were still hanging on.
Yeah, so there were some.
Graham, did you win anything this year? Last year, you won a Kindle there.
Oh yeah, God, we did okay last year, didn't we? Or I did anyway.
I won a Fitbit, and you won a Kindle.
yeah. You know, the only drawing that I saw was you put your business card in a fishbowl thing for a Nexus 7.
Oh yeah.
Did they draw that? Did they announce a winner last night? Or
I don't know. I didn't see it. I didn't even see the fishbowl, so I didn't.
Yeah, it was on one of the tables when you came in, but they may not have announced it at the event. Well, you'd think they would towards the end. I must have just missed it. You know, again, the schmoozing was so thick and heavy that I was missing half what was going on stage.
Well, here's what I loved. I loved the fact that I would say 70% of the people I'd never met before.
Yeah.
That's what I really enjoyed, meeting all kinds of new people. And then Joseph Reuter and Nate Cadillac were there, and I never actually met Nate. He and I have gone back and forth on Twitter. We had great conversations.
Yeah, those guys are fascinating dudes, always involved in interesting stuff.
I knew it. That's the one I really wanted to go to, but
yeah.
Darn.
Oh, well.
Good. It was
Did anybody make it to the Monday night event? Social media SMB? Breakfast?
No.
The mobile event from Verizon. I'm sorry I missed that one too. So
there's so much going on though.
Oh,
everybody's doing, but I maybe they all work together because there aren't a lot of conflicts this year. So that's great.
And yeah. There's still some more stuff next week too. So
So Omation is getting into the cloud data backup services space.
Well, you know, I'd also like to announce that Minivate is getting into the cloud business. So,
are we going to do podcasts in the cloud?
This is a natural formation, though.
Yeah, sure it is.
Because it makes all sense in the world. Well, it does. It seems like it's kind of late for them, though. I mean, they've been in the disc market forever.
Yeah, they're desperate.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I think it's kind of too little, too late. I don't see the differentiation. Although they do, you know, later on in the story, they do talk about that they've got some technology that makes it faster than others. But I mean, it's gonna be a tough one for them.
Yeah, very tough. And
I'm surprised they didn't buy someone like
Code 42.
Code 42, yeah.
Crash plan,
yeah.
They couldn't afford those guys.
No, not right now, no. Code 42 is, oh, man.
The Code 42 must be having quite a laugh, I think.
Well, you know, the difference is that Imation is storing everything on floppy drives that are left over from last century, so.
Yeah.
Oh, they got a good deal on those, huh?
Yeah, they got a good deal, so everything's just going on a floppy in a big warehouse.
Wow.
We shouldn't be so hard on those guys. I actually worked with those guys in 06 when I was with Intradyne, or it might have even been 05 when we were doing backup appliances and email archiving appliances. And there was a lot of software, obviously, behind that. And they sought us out as a partner. So I had some experience working with Imation back in those days, and totally different company, downsized now. And how many times have they changed their leadership over there over the last 5 years? You know, it's a shadow of its former self for sure.
Oh, because everybody had an Imation. I mean, I had Imation discs laying all over the place. So what was their biggest, what was their heyday? What do you suppose their peak year?
It was in the 90s. And I remember when they came out, Apple shipped the first iMac without a floppy drive. And they made one.
So they made a USB.
Yeah, one. And I was at Apple at the time. And in fact, I brought my boss in and we met with a CEO and a guy named Steve Ladwig, who ended up being CEO of Retech, to talk about what they were doing and how they were going to market with that product and what we could do to help and so on. And really what they wanted Steve Jobs to embrace it. Of course, that was,
if Steve Jobs was going to embrace it, I think he would have included it.
Precisely. but they were really looking for help, and they didn't get any from us. That was for sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, what's interesting is last night I talked to both John Roberts and Harold Slawick from New Console, and Harold's daughter, Cecilia, came back here. She was working at Google on Mountain View, and she came back here to go to work for Code 42.
Really? She was there last night.
She was there last night, and they're hiring like mad, Harold said. And so she's in technical support. So I asked her a couple of questions, and it's pretty clear that this is a young lady that really knows her stuff. So that was pretty great.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah. So what else is going on? Well, our pals at Best Buy may get a little bid this week from Dick Schultz and crew.
Yeah, looks like it.
It's looking pretty likely.
Deadline is Saturday, I think, or Sunday. Maybe it's the 16th. So, yeah, I think we should have a contest to guess what the share price offer will be, the first one, and then what the final will be. You want to hear mine?
Okay,
sure.
Okay, I'm guessing in a retail sort of an environment here, the initial offer will be $17.99. And the final offer will be $19.99. So
no, it'll be $19.95, Graham, because that'll be the discount.
Oh, you know? Okay. So all right.
Discount price. So $17.
Do you get reward zones points for those?
Oh man.
Yeah, I thought the column that I read in the Star Tribune that what's his name, the columnist, I'm blanking on his name now, did the other day was very interesting, quoting the private equity guys saying that, you know, Schultz might think he's in control, but when the private equity guys, finance the buyout, they'll be the ones in control.
Yeah.
And the pressure will be on those guys like they can't believe. And so all this talk about, they want to take it private so they don't have the pressure of Wall Street from quarter to quarter. It's like, guess what, dudes? It's going to be daily pressure now.
Yeah.
Go back and read that column. I mean, it's, it's pretty scary. I mean, I don't, I don't think I'd want to be in their shoes, you know.
No. Just,
it's going to be a whole different ballgame if indeed it comes to pass. But
well, see, ironically, and maybe not so much, but 8th Bridge came out with their second annual social commerce study. And I did a post on Minovate about it and some really interesting aspects to this. But here's the kicker. Best Buy is doing none of this. I mean, they're not doing anything. If you go to BestBuy.com, and there's been, I'm not the first one to rain on BestBuy.com's parade, but it's a transaction catalog. That's all it is. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and where's their social commerce aspects?
Well, they did some interesting things with APIs, but I don't think it ever really caught on. I don't see lots of apps that are actually using those APIs.
Well, I don't see, I guess I haven't seen any, but also when you go in and you take a look at product, there are reviews, but I can't share a product, very easily. I mean, they've got, you know, Facebook like, and tweets on it and so forth. But there's nothing that can, for example, tie my review to a product so that I can share that. So if I want to send out to my Twitter followers, hey, if anybody's looking for a TV, here's the one I just bought and here's why, and read my review. They need to sort of step that up, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, Amazon does a good job of that.
They do.
As soon as you buy something, it gives you the opportunity to share it.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, well, they're going to have to pick up their game, but they seem to be Best Buy in merchandising, and whoever's the guy is that's in charge of retail now, and, you know, Stephen Gillette on the digital side, they definitely seem to have picked up their game. But yeah, what are they doing on the social side of things? That's we have yet to hear about that, I guess. So maybe that's coming in 2013.
Well, Tim, in the wine industry, what are you seeing? Because you know, obviously, that there's so many different types of wine, and there's so many different years, and there's so much to know potentially, that I would think the wine industry would be perfect for social commerce and having people that are thought leaders to be able to influence people's purchases.
You'd think so, but there's so many SKUs that it's so fragmented that becomes a problem. And then, you know, just the availability of wines in various markets, it's not quite there yet. And shipping, it's come a long way, but it's still years away before it's, you know, as frictionless as everyone would like it to be.
Because of the state controls?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. There's 50 different laws that you have to comply with. Geez. It's very expensive. You have to, you know, if you're a winery, you have to buy these licenses in the 48 states that allow shipping. And yeah, it's just it's a mess. So there's a lot of impediments, but you're right. And I think that what's happening in the industry with the critics starting to get less important. This week, Robert Parker, who's the leading critic in the wine industry, announced that he sold part of his Wine Advocate newsletter to a Singapore group, which caused a lot of discussion about whether or not, how long will critics like Parker really have the kind of sway in the industry. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting kind of part, right? You know, it's a point in time right now that you would see that, you know, social media would play a large role there. So structurally, I think it's right for that, but there's a lot of fragmentation, which causes issues. It's much easier in the gadget business that Best Buy, makes most of their money in.
Right, right, right. Well, so Google Maps was released for iOS, and I got to tell you that I had no issues.
There was rejoicing in the streets.
Oh my God. It was unbelievable.
The public transportation folks and the walkers were having a collective orgasm
yesterday. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Well, you know,
the walkers.
I had
the walkers. They want those walkers.
They want the walking reports.
The walkers.
Well, I had no problem with the Apple Maps. I really didn't. But the Google Maps works great. Here's the funny part, though, is I use the Gmail app for iPhone, and if I send myself a map link, it'll pull up the browser in the map or in the email client. It will not launch Google Maps.
Mm.
So I thought that was kind of interesting because I use the Chrome browser, I use the Gmail app, and now I have Google Maps. And one would think that they would all be integrated, but they're not yet. I wonder if there's a limitation on that an app can't launch another app. Is that?
No. I think it's because in iOS 6, the mapping is all Apple Maps. Yes. So if there is a map link in anything, it's going to
default. Yeah,
it's going to default to Apple Maps, and there's no way to change that.
I can't imagine there.
No, I understand that, but I'm just saying is that I'm wondering if there's a way that Google could add. So for example, if I'm on the browser on my computer, what I would often do is I would find driving directions to somewhere, and then I would email myself a link. And so then as I'm walking out to the car, I'd open up the email app and then launch Maps. So I understand that it has to be native to the OS to do that, but I'm wondering if Google could add a link that would then launch their own app if it's available.
Or if you could change your browser from Safari to Chrome.
That's not going to happen.
And then if Chrome was smart enough to be able to route that to Maps.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the way it works in Android, but
interesting.
Android, bitch.
Except I hear you get all kinds of advertising crap on Android, which hasn't come to iOS yet. Is that true? I don't use Android.
In what way?
Advertising on crap on mobile. I can't imagine.
There's advertising that are in apps. Just like there are in iOS.
Yeah.
It's app to app, but there's not in the core Google apps, there's no advertising.
Well, that's what I just read in the Associated Press story, but there's a stream of marketing flowing through the Maps app on Android phones.
Oh, yeah. No, there is. On the Maps app, there is advertising.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, but right. there... Yeah. But
it's
there,
not intrusive, though, I don't think.
Well, yeah, but maybe it's going to come to iOS too. I don't know.
I would be very surprised.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, that's another reason to use the iPhone then. Avoid advertising.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Apple will pump ads or something. Figure out.
Yeah, their iAd thing.
Yeah, that went well.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're struggling with that, I guess. Still.
Well, it's just the Google Maps. I have never seen so many people so gleeful.
Yeah.
In my life.
I mean, again, rejoicing in the street, turn by turn directions that don't take you to walls and off cliffs. That's a good thing.
Hopefully all those smart people at Google can now figure out how to avoid the Mayan apocalypse next week.
I know. God, you know what? My wife says, when do you want to go out for your birthday, which is the 22nd? I go, well, let's do it before the 21st.
The 21st, yeah.
So I can actually have it. Now, did you see that, by the way, that NASA came out with a page about why the apocalypse is bullshit?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Which it is, of course.
Of course it is, but I'm just amazed at how many people are just freaked out about it.
Well, it is disconcerting.
What is?
I mean, that there was some ancient civilization that, you know, built this great map, you know, great calendar system thousands of years ago, and it just runs out next week. I mean, that's a little disconcerting, but, you know.
Yeah, but like NASA said, that's because they were starting the next cycle on the calendar, but clearly the civilization was collapsing because of drought. And who's gonna spend their time? If you don't have enough to eat and drink, who's gonna spend their time making a calendar for the next couple of millennium?
Well, it's nice that NASA came out and
felt
the urge to straighten people out on that.
I would agree. Thanks, NASA.
And listen, before we leave the Apple thing, has anybody tried the new Gmail on iOS?
Yeah, I use it all the time. Yeah.
It's really clean. Yeah. It's very clean. It's an awesome app. I like it.
Yeah. So do I.
On the iPad.
Yeah. Too. It's very easy to read on the iPad.
Well, and what I'll keep coming back to is the use of multiple signatures. So I have 11 email addresses, and being able to pick which one I want to use is fabulous. And then, of course, it appends the signature to it. The only thing I don't like, you know how you'll do two dashes and then do a return and then put your name and everything that follows? Well, the app puts in a couple more, or maybe it puts in three. And so now I have three, and then I have two, and then I have my name. And I can't figure out how, for the life of me, I can't figure out how to turn that off.
Huh.
So it's just little, it's a stupid little thing, but it's one of those little minor annoyances. But,
well, complain to them and maybe they'll fix it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. They'll pick up the phone when I call.
One will answer.
No one will answer.
Oh my gosh.
You guys know that Google shuttered their access here in Minneapolis, right?
No. When did that happen?
Well, that happened a couple months ago. I guess we didn't bring it up, but yeah. You remember Ben Tice was our Google. He's no longer there. So because there's no there in Minneapolis.
Don't what did know they have there? I don't even know if I knew what they had.
Well, they had a marketing presence, and they were working at, you know, working with small businesses, you know, getting them involved in Google products and, you know, Google Plus and setting up, you know, websites, et cetera. So. But yeah, I obviously didn't go well.
Oh,
well, did you see also that WordPress announced a new enterprise offering? So they have their VIP for the big, huge sites like TechCrunch and GigaOm and others. And then they have the free WordPress.com. So they decided that there was a mid-market that needed their services. So they have an offering for $500 a month.
Wow.
I just think.
Well, $500 a month? What does this do?
Well, I know. That's exactly what I said. It's like, are you serious?
What does it do?
I don't know. I think it shines your shoes and gives you a back rub.
Well, I would hope to hell it does something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I really don't know. I mean, isn't that incredible?
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
High availability, I guess.
Well, still, I mean, how much availability do you really need?
Well, if it's a mission critical thing, like if you're running the New York Times on WordPress.
Then you'd host VIP.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I suppose, you know, at the end of the day, the best thing to do is the people that actually ride herd on WordPress managing it would give people warm fuzzies and they're willing to pay for that. But boy, that seemed expensive.
You bet.
Yeah. Yeah. Incredible. Anyway, so I actually sent this next story about the first OS X fake installer malware has been spotted. And I sent this out to a bunch of my friends and family and just that have Macs and said, hey, heads up. Because I keep telling them
The party's over.
Well, the party's been over for a while though. I've made sure that everybody I know, you know, if they go somewhere and the flash pop-up happens and that they need flash, don't install it. Actually go to Adobe and download it and install it. You know, cause there are fake installers. Don't ever install if a browser asks you to install something. And,
really?
Yeah. Phil, you'd be surprised.
I mean, know.
There's a lot of newbies out there.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah. Kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's oh, okay. Well, it's from the internet. It must be good.
Right. And so anyway, it's getting, this particular one looks pretty good too. The fonts are wrong. So that's one clue on the installer, but a lot of people will just ignore that. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Tim, have you been concerned about Android malware? Have you narrowed down how that happens?
Not particularly.
Is it the same sort of thing that's installed through the browser, or is it app related? Or
yeah, I think it's mostly if you're going to install apps that aren't in the major app stores. So I only use the Play Store, which Google maintains, and the Amazon App Store. So I think if you stay there, you'll probably be pretty good shape, but it's not 100% guarantee. So you can run some virus software on your Android device that actually checks as as it's installing the application.
Oh, really? Yeah. Can you find a link for that? That would be good for folks to know. Okay.
Yep. Do you use that, Phil? Do you use virus protection or do you this?
No, I don't, to tell you the truth.
You practice unsafe Android computing.
I do. It's terrible. It's terrible. But, I don't download a whole lot of apps. But, yeah, you're right. It's it is somewhat stupid of me.
It's the Wild West out there.
Huh? I'm telling you.
Woohoo! Unless you know what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, I'll also tell you that Eric Schmidt is really making hay out of Android's smartphone market share.
Yeah, jeez.
What's he thinking about?
Well,
God forbid he should make hay out of this.
Well, but that's just part of the story,
Which part?
What's the other part?
The other part is who's profiting most from smartphones, and that's...
Well, that's just it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They're losing that battle. Hey, did you hear one of the great things I picked up from Rob Weber last night? You guys will love this. Do you know that W3i's chairman, Young Soon, who is a big-time tech industry exec, actually out of the semiconductor industry, based in Silicon Valley, but has his cabin here in Minnesota, and it was one of the early investors in W3i. He not only is he on the board of ARM Holdings over in the UK, the chip company behind most of Apple's chips, he recently joined Samsung as president.
Oh, is he the guy that said that he uses iOS at home?
You heard it. Yeah. Right. Apparently, the MIT publication Technology Review did an interview of him, and it's I know the editor there. He used to be at Red Herring for many years. I don't know if he did the interview or what, but apparently when he said he uses the iPhone, it just blew up on the blogosphere.
Yeah, it did. Oh my God. Yeah. That was funny.
We should put a link in about that. I haven't even read about it yet. I just heard about it last night from Rob. He thought it was pretty funny. Guy's in a maelstrom right now, dealing with that, I guess.
Yeah.
Hama. What did I say?
Hama. I said what?
I said what?
What am I on, crack? I'm sorry.
Yeah, we'll find that. We'll put it in the show notes because that was pretty amazing. But you know what? At the end of the day, though, I thought that was pretty smart because it makes them have an opportunity to keep going with Apple because there was an article yesterday about how Apple has really ratcheted up their R&D spend to the tune of several billion dollars, and nobody outside Apple knows where that money's going. People are trying to track it down now and try to figure out where Apple's spending the money. And there's a lot of conjecture that what they're doing is they're going to become a lot more vertically integrated and make their own chips. And, people have talked about Sharp Electronics being on the fence and that Apple could potentially even buy Sharp. Because they've certainly got the dough.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out because the stakes are so... I mean, in a way, isn't it amazing? Because I love competition like this. Just love competition because we are the ones who benefit from it.
Oh, absolutely. Yep.
And so...
Yeah, I saw a report that there's conjecture they might be building a chip plant in New York, I believe. Apple could be.
Yeah, yeah.
Of course, no one knows, but there are people that are sniffing around and thinking it might be Apple that's inquiring about, I don't know, sites or whatever to build some huge plant.
Right.
So, yeah. It will be fun to see where they go in 2013. That is for sure.
Well, everybody, frankly. Because I can't believe if you look at how incredibly bad smartphones were, if you consider the Trio 750, I had a smartphone. Because Phil, you had the same one, right?
I still have it.
Still have it? Yeah, I should have kept mine. Doggone.
Carries it in his cargo pants.
I don't.
No, his Zubas. He straps it to his Zubas.
Yeah. Zubas with cargo pants. Oh, there you go.
That, I tell you, that wacky Graham.
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
a gift idea.
Well, see, that's why Tim is so incredibly happy that Target has lounge pants for sale, because they've got Tweety Bird and they've got, you know, Toy Story. Right, Tim?
Really? I didn't know that.
Oh, thanks.
Lakeville loungewear.
Maybe I'll get some Angry Birds.
There you go.
Hey, there, yeah.
Please do.
But I had a, in fact, I still do have a Trio 650. It's laying around here somewhere. And you know that, for the time, it wasn't a bad phone.
No.
It's a little big. It was a little big. It had a funny antenna sticked out the top, you know. But if you wanted to do web and apps and all that, it worked. You know, it did that job. And for the early part of the 2000s, it was a decent phone.
Yeah,
they kind of lost their way there with their Palm OS, and you know, that had to go with Windows Mobile there for a while. But you know, they certainly showed the way, and Apple just perfected it. And they were so far ahead of everybody, it just completely put the market into a they just dominated the market. And that's why it forced the hand of Google doing Android and going all in on Android.
Yep.
Because there was just, Microsoft had to start over. So did Palm, to try to catch up. And it appears to be too late for both of them. So,
not to speak of BlackBerry, which used to be considered a fine phone. And they're desperately trying to hang on now.
Well, the thing with BlackBerry was that they were really never in the smartphone business. They were in the messaging phone business.
Yeah.
And the enterprise server business is what they were in.
And their phones, the ones that really gained traction, were the ones that didn't require a data plan. Or if they did, they were like edge data. And it was like really slow, very cheap data. Mm-hmm. So... yeah, so they were really never in the same business as, you know, Palm and Windows and Apple with iOS. So they still have a shot, I think, because they do have, you know, shockingly enough, a large installed base. So they have a chance to, I think, be that third platform if they can pull off a major transformation.
Yep, they apparently they've signed up the U.S. Department of Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, and that's like going to help them, you know, stay alive. And they're trying to, they've lost out to several other U.S. departments in favor of the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
So, they're a much changed company, RIM is, over the years, over the last few years.
Well, do you guys have any interest in, and especially you, Tim, because we're going to keep coming back to you because you're the Android.
Hey, Phil is the Android guy too.
No, I know he is, but you're the gearhead. What about? Hey. Do you have any?
Hey!
do you have any interest in buying that? That whatever price it's going to be, $20, $30, $40 tablet from India just to try it.
Yeah, I actually do. Although it seems redundant to a Nexus 7, but I do have interest in these really low end Android tablets because they seem to be getting to a point where they could be very usable.
Yeah,
you know, before the hardware was just so bad that it wasn't even worth $100 or whatever they were being charged for. They had bad screens and, the processors were janky. And now this seems like it's getting better and better. So it would be interesting to see how those very low-end machines, how they can fare in the marketplace, because they would be very disruptive.
Yeah.
You know, there is a rumor that Google will come out with a Nexus 7 that will be $99, which I think could be also very disruptive. Because the build quality on the 7 is as good as what Apple's doing. So
who's building this $30 or $40 one? Actually, is it being built in India?
Yes.
It is. It's being built, and they've got 100,000 orders from the Indian government now. Initially, ironically, too, they're giving them to engineering students in university. Hmm. So they're not going to... I'll put a link in the show notes to the company and so on, but they are... obviously trying to get this into K-12 in India by the millions. But certainly they're probably going to put it through its paces and get these engineering students to
made out probably, of cardboard.
Well, no. Actually, I saw.
No, it's actually.
I'll show you a video, or I'll
fairly well built for something that's that low cost.
Exactly.
Yeah. It, a lot has to do with the supply chain in India and how you know how low the it costs to build stuff there. So you know, shipping that out here would probably double the cost. So this $40, you know, in India tablet will probably cost close to $100 here.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Just because of the supply, you know, just to get it to market costs quite a bit of money.
Well, and they're actually a British company, and so the two brothers started it in Montreal and then moved it to the UK, and they are apparently you can buy it now. So,
online only.
Online, yeah.
Yep. It's not going to be in Best Buy for a while, probably.
Right. I don't think it'll ever be in Best Buy.
No, not for that kind of price.
Because there's this no profit in it.
Yeah.
For a retailer. So I think someone like Amazon would be the only place where you can get this, and they have some reasons to not sell something like this too, because it might cannibalize their Kindle sales.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yep. But yeah, it's an interesting space to watch. And, you know, this is sort of like the real culmination of the one child per laptop per child kind of thing, you know, where they wanted to do it for $100. It ended up being what, 250 or so, something like that. It's been mildly successful. Something like this could really be a game changer.
Well, so let me ask you guys a question, and I probably should have done this in the show notes ahead of time, but this conversation sort of sparking it. You know, most of these, like this low-end device is Wi-Fi only. And did you guys hear about this? Because a lot of people haven't. I didn't hear about it until I started doing this project that just ended here a couple weeks ago, that in September, Intel demonstrated a Wi-Fi chip. And it goes right on to it can go on a motherboard, for example, and they showed it because they're going to be able to build that into silicon and make it essentially adhere to Moore's law in terms of cost and functionality. And it's 7 gigabits per second for throughput, which is, you know, 7 times the current standard or more. And the cool thing is it'll do every protocol that's out right now, all the 802.11 protocols, but it'll also do Zigbee, which is what SmartThings uses.
Hmm.
And it'll do Z-Wave, which a lot of, companies are jumping on as a little bit more of a robust protocol. And so in theory, SmartThings could have, their stuff. They wouldn't have to make a hub. You know, they could end up with a cloud-based management system that would work with somebody's Wi-Fi router. So I think that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Ooh.
So that's going to be a big development. And a lot of people say, like I was talking to Justin Grammons last night, Phil, you know, we were talking about Mobile March coming up and so forth.
Yep.
And I mentioned this to him, and he hadn't heard about it either, because I was asking him if he knew much about it. But he also said, yeah, we'll see if it actually ships. And I said, well, they've already got the chip. I mean, they showed the actual chips. I mean, they showed them working. So they've already fabbed them. And so it's going to be, you know, obviously they've got to sell them to manufacturers of routers and stuff. But it's going to be interesting, because we're going to see some pretty amazing stuff happening. And Mark Andreessen just came out and said that over the next 3 years, we're going to see more change in the next 3 years in technology than we have in the last 30.
Hmm.
And he talked about, you know, this kind of stuff, you know, all these things happening concurrently, all, you know, people running around all over the world with these powerful computers in their pockets or purses. And what does that, you know, ultimately mean for all of this? So I think that's pretty cool.
Yep. He's the guy that definitely is saying we are not in a bubble. It is not a bubble, people, you know?
Yeah.
And his other theme is software is eating the world. You know, software is disrupting so many industries. It's crazy, you know. So yeah, he's a guy worth listening to, I'd say.
Yep, absolutely. So, what else is going on? Mobile March is, speaking of Mobile March, Mobile March is coming up, right? When's registration open?
Not right away, but yeah, it's open right now.
Oh, it's open right now. How about that?
And you can save money.
Yeah, so you save some money. So, early bird registration, never a bad thing. That's until the 15th of January.
Cool.
And we have confirmed our first keynote speaker.
Oh, who's that?
That is Bob Shukai. He's the global head of mobile technology over at Thomson Reuters.
Ah,
interesting. So that should be a good time. And so grab your tickets now. And it's sponsored by the fine folks at Code 42 and LiveFront, Fusion Room, and Verizon. They're our major sponsors this year.
Cool.
Excellent.
Check it out, baby.
Yep. Yeah,
for sure. And we got Mini Analytics Forum coming up in January. I'll say a few words about that. Talking with Dan Atkins again last night.
I did too, yeah.
They already have more than 500 people registered for that thing. Some major sponsors behind it. BigDataMN.Eventbrite.com at the Carlson School. And they are still seeking some breakout speakers. So any of you data scientists and analytics geeks out there can contact Dan Atkins. Dan at danalytics.net.
And I would highly recommend that if you want to go, you better sign up.
Yep. They're going to run out of capacity at Carlson pretty soon. I don't know if 600-ish is maybe tops. It will fill up, and they're still adding speakers. They've got some good ones already, that are listed, I think, but obviously the agenda is being updated, continuously.
Right.
So it'll be a good one. Minnesota's Field Guide to Analytics, they're calling it. And there'll be, people coming from around the country too. It won't just be local folks at this one. So good on him, you know. It's a second big event after they had that one back in May where Robert Stevens spoke, and they attracted close to 600 to that one as well. So it's a big topic. Data is hot.
It is.
It's the year of the data scientist for sure.
Well, do you guys remember when we did our, well, it's because it's only a few weeks ago, the podcast about QFO labs, mm-hmm. and I made the joke about armed drones, about how I really want an armed drone. Well, some guy made a flying drone with a paintball gun, and he actually showed how it could, you could use it for shooting, and I'll put a link in the show notes because the video is actually kind of interesting, even though they've got his voice disguised and he's got a mask, you know, he's got a kerchief on his face, and you know, it's like a terrorist showing how they modified AK-47s to shoot lasers or something, but it's really focused on the fact that government is buying drones like mad, you know, the Coast Guard and the DEA and the Border Patrol and all, you know, everybody's buying these drones. Because anybody that can do video games can fly the doggone thing, so you can have your kid come in and work part time and fly the drones around, I suppose, with cameras. But you can put a Go camera on the front, and it's pretty cool.
So it's the drone business is getting to be a big industry in a lot of different categories, and I've been hearing a lot about this fact. Sometime we should have my friend Gary Doan on. He's literally building them in his garage. Jeez. And is attacking a certain market segment that I can't recall right off the top of my head now. But he knows all the regulations and all the, you know, all the different categories of drones. And it's fascinating. And then, you know, it goes all the way down to these toy things like QFO Labs quadcopter that can actually carry a little bit of a payload. So you could have a video cam on that thing.
So that would be That would be the Gary Doan drone. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, yes. The Gary drone.
The Gary Doan drone. Doan drone.
Gary is a serial entrepreneur, so, and he's quite the product developer, inventor guy. And I don't know really where he's going to go with this thing, but I maybe shouldn't even be talking about it. But he's a tinkerer, and he's well into it and is extremely educated on this whole category. As are, you know, some of the other guys like UFO. We talked about this in the last podcast, didn't we? How Chris Anderson of Wired left as editor to go do his DIY drones company.
He's passionate about it. He really is.
Oh yeah, it's a huge, huge underground of geeks that are involved in this area. Oh, all this around just, the world.
This just in, Imation is launching drones. No.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Deliver floppy disks. Just like the bomb, the burrito bomb.
Well, there's plenty going on, so be sure to check the show notes for any other events coming up. And we will see you next week on
the Minovate Gang Podcast.
See you later.
Take care.
Over and out.
For a chance to come, something's gotta give, someone's gotta run. All right now, well, 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 well. My turn to shine.